The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down.
Good afternoon, Philadelphia. Welcome back to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. This is your host, Gary Heasley, in the studio with Chris Glover. Chris, welcome.
Thank you very much, Gary. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us today. This is going to be an interesting second hour. We're going to change gears pretty substantially here, and we're going to bring on here in a second Catherine Austin Fitz, who is the publisher of the Solari Report. Now, Catherine is a very high-level executive in the Bush administration some time ago, and she got exposed to a whole lot of things there. We've spent some time on this because Catherine's been on the show before, but she learned that maybe a couple of dollars were missing. And by the time she was done, she got it to about $12 billion or $12 trillion. Somebody worked with some other folks and finally put out a report showing $21 trillion missing. Now, that happens to tie very nicely to the first part of our conversation about the $40 trillion of debt we have, and no one can tell us where it went. No one has anything to show for it. But there's another issue that is rearing its head these days, and that is this issue of the digital control grid. So we're going to bring on Catherine and have a conversation about this digital control grid, what it is and what it means. Catherine, welcome back to the Conservative Voice on WWDB in Philadelphia.
Hey, good to be with you.
Well, we're
not going to believe this, Gary. I just, when you just started, a marching band start rolling by, we're having a festival here in Savoy, and a marching band started, just went rolling under my window. So forgive me if it's a little noisy in the background.
Well, we'll enjoy the musical interlude if that happens.
I think the marching band's appropriate for the topic.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, this is something that we've been watching happen for a long time, right? Google gets created. We find out that this is actually a surveillance company who monetizes its product through advertising and sales to government and business. You know, there's been a surveillance level that's been coming for a long time. You know, that's taken a whole new turn in China, where you may be denied access to a bus if a party member doesn't like you, you know, if you don't have the right social credit score. Where is it right now? What do you see happening with this digital control grid?
So the digital control grid, what you're looking to do is to put together a surveillance system that allows you to control people, and you want control at different levels. The most important one for the West is to have a financial transaction control where literally in an all digital monetary system, I can make a set of rules about how you can and can't use your money, and I can control that and evolve it day to day. So if there's a pandemic and I say I want everybody locked down, then suddenly your credit card and your bank card and all your money won't work outside of, you know, you can't leave your home because your money won't work outside of your home. Or if I say your health program, you know, we have you now wearing wearables, I'm tracking you, and I say, well, you can't eat pizza, you know, we don't think that's good for you, your money literally won't work for pizza. And if you have canceled checks and cash, you have no way of buying anything other than through the digital system where you can be controlled. So just as I couldn't put sanctions on Russia, I can put sanctions on any individual, you know, who's within the system. Now, but, you know, the first level of control after surveillance is nudging or controlling people's money, turning their money off and on. So let's say I want you to take a drug. If you won't take that drug and you won't give your children that drug, you know, I'll cut off or even freeze your money. So we also have the Canadian truckers, so we know what that looks like. The next level of control is literally to put you in the kill box. So we are watching, you know, a real revolution in military warfare in the last couple of years with the genocide in Gaza and now the war in Iran being essentially a manhunt. What you're doing is, you know, what we're saying is, okay, rather than, you know, drop bombs on everybody. We're certainly dropping bombs, but we're going to use a SpaceX and Lavender kind of military system to surveil all the military leaders and the nuclear scientists, and we will send in drones and just kill them. And it's acceptable to kill them in their homes and to have collateral damage to their neighbors. If they're in an apartment building, we blow up the whole apartment building, their neighbors die too. So it's very targeted as a manhunt. And that's because you want to exercise control one person at a time. So mm-hmm. it's both surveillance, nudging, you know, there are other tactics we can talk about, mind control, but controlling people's money up into killing them. So, you know, we're talking about extraordinary control that can work very economically because you have AI and software. It all depends on really high quality identification. So I need to make sure before I send in the drone to kill you that I know you are really you and not somebody else. So, mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't pay to have accidents here. If I'm going to freeze your money, I want to know it's really you.
Yes.
And the way you do that is with a high quality digital ID. And we're watching the new administration push the Real ID and the implementation of what will become a national digital ID system in the United States very, very aggressively. And we were so amazed at the speed at which the new administration was building the control grid. And I should say both, you know, it's quite interesting because if you look at how uniparty politics in America work, you have, when it comes to the culture wars, you have tremendous differences between the Democrats and Republicans. And clearly people like you and me are very relieved to see, you know, suddenly we have people in the administration who are getting rid of DEI and all sorts of ESG and other things that were very offensive and wasteful. At the same time, they're even, you know, the old administration is building the control grid. The new one is building it even faster. Mm-hmm. And we've put up a list on Solari. I sent you the link mm-hmm. called the Fast Approaching Control Grid. And we're literally, you know, when I was doing radio shows and trying to explain how the digital control grid was being implemented, it was exploding into so many steps that were being taken that I literally said, okay, we've got to make a list, and we update it regularly. You know, we're adding features every week. And so you can see how it works. And the way to think about it is imagine an invisible corral being put up around us, mm-hmm. you know, being put up around you, being put up around your family, being put up around your home, being put up around your community. But because it's digital, it's invisible. And it works with telecommunications and the satellites. It's invisible, but it's coming up piece by piece by piece by piece. There are many different pieces. But once they all link up and work together, suddenly they fuse into what I call the digital concentration camp. And so this has been kind of sneaking up on us for many years, and now it's accelerating. And as it accelerates, we can start to see how the pieces fit together and feel the controls. It was very interesting. You know, one of the issues in an all-digital currency system, and it's really not currency because it's control. Currency implies liquidity. Mm-hmm. If the central bankers do the control currency, it's called CBDCs. Now, if you want to do them, you can do them as private stable coins as long as the social credit system and the interoperability click in, so you can
right.
it'll probably, you know, stable coins will be the privatized version of CBDC, which is in some respects is more dangerous. But whichever way it comes out, you're talking about a system, and the best way to describe it, the last one of the Biden administration nominees to control of the currency, who thank God was turned down thanks to some very good Republican senators. She had just before her nomination to be control of the currency, she wrote an article in the Law Review at Vanderbilt saying the great thing about CBDCs is if the central bank was worried about inflation, they could just freeze everybody's bank accounts.
That's terrifying. You touched on some things. I just want to help people make sure people follow for a minute. Canadian truckers ties exactly to what you just said. And this is where the Canadian truckers mounted a protest that they had every right to mount, and the government responded by seizing their cash, right?
Right. Right.
And
it's
and
basically, well, they not only seized their cash, they froze the accounts of even friends or people who donated. So, you know, they had crowd funds up, and people who donated literally had their accounts frozen.
So that's a good point. That's right. So they didn't just seize the accounts of the truckers. They seized people who donated to the truckers and then tried to pursue them all with criminal charges that were baseless. And it was purely an act of tyranny. That's exactly what it was. It was nothing but tyranny.
Well, I would say it was an act of control, because you're talking, first you surveil, so you destroy people's privacy, you get all their data. Then you use that data to influence them. If the influence doesn't get them to do what you want, you use that to take legal or financial action. And if that doesn't work, you know, literally you can start to torture them electronically or even kill them electronically.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at a continuum all the way from mind control and nudging to the kill box.
Now,
here's the thing to understand about mm-hmm. this. That what AI and software mean is that control and freedom happen one person at a time. The way I nudge you or the way I control you is entirely different than the way I control other people in your family or in your neighborhood. So people don't see it. It's not clear to them that they're dealing with one force, because the management is so tailor-made. And of course, the AI and software make that, you know, financially feasible.
The AI and software, and if it does get to the point where they want to take someone out, at the point that they could use these drones, we've seen these now for a couple of years being very effective in doing that. A tie that I think we should probably recognize is that when that was happening in Canada, when they were seizing those accounts, the person responsible for doing it was a woman named Chrystia Freeland. Chrystia Freeland,
right,
of course, was very, very close to the World Economic Forum.
Right.
Right. So she was an officer.
Right. And I think she was also a candidate to be the head of Canada, and Carney, in fact, won.
Yes, I think so, too. So this was a very senior elected official inserted into the Canadian government somehow. I'm not sure if she was elected or what. I think, I don't know if they appoint that position. But she comes right out of Davos.
Just remember that the head of Canada pledges allegiance to the crown, not to the people.
Oh, that's true.
That's
yes.
True.
And yeah, it's pretty clear that Trudeau had no allegiance to the people. There is a system in India called Aadhaar, which I think has more than a billion people in it, which is a digital ID, a digital national ID that you have to have access to use any services in India. I think that's a living example of what they're planning for us.
So, you know, I think you're being optimistic. So if you go to Solari and you go into the menu, there'll be something in the menu called video shorties. Let me go there now. I'll send you the link. So, or video shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have are, you know, I'm a great believer in one, you know, 60 to 90 second videos that kind of explain a key issue. And hold on, let me just get this. That's called Video Shorts.
And we'll put this link up in our social media for folks that are listening or following on X or Rumble.
So there's the first one on the left is called Financial Transaction Freedom. And if you watch the first 3 1-minute videos, you will see three central bankers explaining to you what they intend to do. And okay, so Gary, do I have your email?
I've got the link up. Which short is it?
It's so you see the link that says Video Transaction Freedom.
Financial Transaction Freedom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so click on that playlist. And I want you right now, it's just a minute, just watch the first video. So this is Augustine Carson's, the This is the general manager of the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, who's running the global process to implement CBDCs. And this is at an IMF panel in 2020, and he's explaining why he likes CBDCs.
So what I'm going to do so that the listeners can also participate is I'm going to email this to Tyler in just a second.
Okay.
And he can play it on the air for us.
What I have to say, I'm looking at this report that you've made, Catherine, inside the Solari report, that's going through this control grid. The number of points that you're hitting on here are staggering.
Yep.
From the money control,
I have to tell you, the
war on cash.
The Trump administration hit, somebody had done a lot of planning, because if you look at the speed at which they moved to implement all these things, it's been dazzling. Someone had clearly had all the plans prepared and was ready to move fast.
Just to confirm, is it cross-border payment a vision for the future?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
But promise me after the show you'll watch the next two. They're only a minute each, and you just can't miss this one.
Yeah, I will. I will watch those. I've watched some of these shorts before, but I'll catch that. You should have it, Tyler,
I think,
in a second.
Gary, I think I've shown them to you before, but the central bankers are telling you they want complete control.
They want total control.
They want total control.
And you're talking about the speed at which the administration is moving, and I think, I've seen some things. For example, I don't understand this, but they just appointed four new tech execs as colonels in the military?
So that one makes a lot of sense to me, because remember, if you look at the AI plus drone warfare, mm-hmm. or it's called, some call it military targeting, you're looking at implementing a war and doing kills one by one. So you're trying to take out the other team's command structure.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on what your goal is. If your goal is regime change, part of what you want to do, I'm assuming, and I've been told this, and I still need more confirmation, that literally you now have, thanks to the satellite systems mm-hmm. and Palantir, Lavender kinds of systems, mm-hmm. you now have every person in Iran identifiable. So all 92 million people are identifiable and trackable, through the surveillance systems. And what that means is you can say, okay, these 100 people, we want to identify and kill them. It's fine if we kill their families and neighbors when we kill them.
Right.
And then these other people, we want to mind control. And we want to persuade to go along with regime change or whatever. And it's all part of what's called hybrid warfare. One of the most important unanswered questions, I think, in my world is, how did the Russians, we lost in the Ukraine, or at least we've lost so far. And it's because the Russians played a conventional warfare game. We played hybrid warfare, but they found a way to defend against the hybrid warfare. The question is, how did they do it? And I can talk about some of the things they did to maintain their financial situation. So that part of hybrid warfare didn't work. But how did they meet the electronic mind control? I don't know how they did it. But I think it's a very important question to figure out and to understand sort of what happened and why the neocon strategy has failed so badly.
Okay. So, interestingly, while you were saying that, our live stream system went down. So,
it's not digital control.
I'm going to call it quit. I mean, we've been stable. Everything's running great. I may have it back up, but suddenly,
Gary,
boom.
I just have to tell you, in my experience, I'm special.
Yes, I think that is true. Tyler, do you have that clip? Let's play that first minute of that clip.
All our analysis on CBDC, in particular for the use of general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash. Mm-hmm. And there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who's using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. And also, we will have the technology to enforce that. Those two issues are extremely important, and that makes a huge difference with respect to what cash is.
I keep asking anybody.
Wow. So,
right. So what he's saying is, we can set the rules. First of all, he's saying it's not your money, it's our money.
Yep.
Then he's saying we can set the rules on how you can use our money, and we can enforce from a central standpoint, you know, so we control. You can't, you know, if you don't do what we say, we can turn your money on and off, or we can stipulate where and how it can be spent.
It was the part that really is gut-punching is the way he used the word, the expression of cash.
Right.
Is right. To tell you that cash is not real. It's what they say it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
That changes everyone's basic concept of understanding what money truly is.
Right. But remember, this can only work in a 100% digital system. So we've had a campaign going for 3 years called Make Cash Great Again.
Mm-hmm.
And we have hats called Make Cash Great Again. And we have bumper stickers called Make Cash Great Again. Because, you know, this only works if you go to 100% digital. And that's the thing that has to be defeated. We need to resurrect analog. Now, interestingly enough, you have some of the top Scandinavian central banks now saying, you know, something we need to, we made a mistake by trying to cancel out cash, because we've seen what happens in disasters. And if you don't have cash, it makes the disasters that much worse. So, and that happened, I think the Finnish central bank came out after Western North Carolina. So one of the things that's literally critical for every person to do is to do everything you can to use cash, and, you know, and encourage stores that you deal with to use cash, and do everything you can to build back the market share of cash.
Well, you know, when I hear about the stablecoin they want to bring out, the question I keep asking, setting aside what we're talking about now, what's the legitimate reason for this? So you're saying you're going to make a digital currency that's backed by the U.S. dollar. And so do I not have sufficient liquidity with the dollar between cash and credit cards and checks?
So let me explain why they want to bring out stablecoins. And it's multiple reasons. So if you want to, if you look at the market share of the dollar worldwide, there is tremendous pressure coming from the BRICS nations to trade outside the dollar or to hold reserves outside the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing real pressure in the treasury market because the demand for treasuries is skyrocketing. So the belief is if you flood the world with stable coins, which essentially are a way to do dollars, but you can do them through the mobile payment systems and literally circumvent traditional banking controls. So I can literally go into a country that where they can't stop me technologically, or where people are using the mobile payment systems, and I can flood that country in a way that gets people off of their local currency and onto the dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So if it works, I can dramatically increase market share. Now, it appears to me their plan to make it work is to flood the world with credit, including farm credit. So every small farmer in the world, I say, you know, will lend you money in stable coins.
Mm-hmm.
And you put out credit in stable coins, and the next thing you know, you're dramatically improving the market share of dollars, and you're flooding the treasury market with more debt. So it's a way of hyperinflating without going through the traditional dollar systems.
We're just having the good old days of actually having a currency backed by something.
Right.
Well, here's the thing. So first of all, the dollar is backed by something. So I'm you know, it's traditionally been backed by a lot. We can talk about that. But, you know, what you're also talking about doing is building a market for treasury bonds in a way that puts everybody you haven't gotten a debt trap in a debt trap.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right, because debt is part of the control system.
Yes.
So if you believe it or not, if you want to understand the marketing plan for stable coins, go watch a new movie called G20. I do not recommend it to you as an entertainment experience, but it is a movie about the president of the United States going to the G20 meeting in South Africa. And I would point out that the G20 meeting is in South Africa in November, and presenting and politicking for her plan to do stable coins and loan to farmers worldwide. And, you know, if you know how long it takes to roll out a Hollywood movie, you can see, you know, this plan has been underway for a while.
Well, Catherine, we all know that movies are fake and that news is real.
Right. Well, but in America, fact is fiction and fiction
Correct.
Is fact, right?
Correct.
There you go.
Well, look.
Yeah, so, yeah. So there's, remember, the Genius Act is passed in the Senate. The Stable Act still has to be passed and then reconciled. Let's say they can do that by September. Then you're going to see the big banks either individually, you know, so basically instead of doing the CBC through the New York Fed, you're going to do stable coins through the subsidiaries. They're going to do their own or they'll team up or, you know. It's one of the reasons the Circle IPO was so successful, and they're gonna aggressively roll out stablecoins. And I think if it turns out to be as big as they intend, the question for the rest of us is: this is going to be a tsunami of government and central bank promoted crypto, mm-hmm. and it's going to be hyperinflationary. And how do we want to deal with it? You know, how do we navigate this train? Because it's like you can't duck this wave. It's too big if they succeed.
If they succeed. And you know, this idea of a central bank digital currency got very unpopular very quickly. The central banks are not viewed very favorably by anybody anymore. I think people have come to understand that mm-hmm. scam. And so they just simply changed the product to stablecoin. What's, you know, you like the word stable, coins
well, but
are
here,
fine.
Here's let's look at a organizational chart of the New York Fed. So the New York Fed is the beating heart of the Federal Reserve. That's where all the money is. You know, that's where the New York Fed is the depository for the U.S. government. The New mm-hmm. York Fed runs the primary dealer. The New York Fed manages the Exchange Stabilization Fund, which is the mother of all slush funds. You know, they're the money guys. Okay, they're the heart of the system. Okay, so the New York Fed is a private bank owned by a group of banks. So they are the owners. They are the controllers of the New York Fed.
Mm-hmm.
So if the public rejects the New York Fed putting out a CBDC, we just get the owners and controllers of the New York Fed to do stable coins.
Right.
And what you've got is you've got, you know, it's basically meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
It's right? Great marketing.
Now, yeah, it's great marketing. But here's the other thing, and this is very important. The Fed is a creature created by Congress. And as a result, it is under the jurisdiction of Congress, and it has major disclosure obligations to Congress.
Yes.
Okay? And in fact, some of them really were exercised after the fiscal crisis. You know, as part of giving them $27 trillion of taxpayers' money and credit.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do this through stablecoins, you move this controllable, you know, programmable currency one or two steps away from that kind of jurisdiction and control, which is why stablecoins are potentially much more dangerous than CBDC. Now, they're both ridiculously dangerous and unacceptable. So essentially what you have is where the old model. So let me say it this way. There's a great Italian revolutionary who said once, he said, the new world has yet to appear. The old world refuses to die. Now is the time of monsters, right? What we need is the new world to emerge. Because what we need to do is take this wonderful, powerful new technology and use it to build real wealth and real civilization instead of control. And you know, if you go back 20 years, mm-hmm. the leaders of the country said to Silicon Valley, look, we will let you build monopolies and become billionaires if you will assure us global dominance. So the tech bros built, you know, billionaires and monopolies, and guess what? They blew it. And now, you know, the system is basically saying, with provisions like what's in the Big Beautiful Bill, oh, you know something, let's double down and give you trillions more in the theory that you can get it back. Now, I don't think that plan works. I didn't think the plan worked in 1998, which is why I pulled out and left, mm-hmm. you know, left Washington long and New York long behind. But, you know, and I think that's what your show is about, Gary. We're seeking civilization, and whether it's in our own lives or our families' lives or our communities or our states, you know, how the heck do we help that new system emerge? But that's where we are. And what's important, I find, is sometimes I feel like my shows are way too gruesome. What we need to understand, I used to have a pastor who would say, if we can face it, God can fix it. We need to understand that the plan for central control is that insane. It's that psychopathic. It's that demonic. It's just completely and utterly demonic. And one of the things that has helped it build as far as it's gotten is nobody can believe it's really that bad. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I put together lists like that list or the video list is I want people to understand, yeah, it really is that bad. We're talking about something that completely ends human rights and property rights. Completely. It's the slavery system. It's that bad.
Expanded.
Yeah. I think one of the problems we have in this country is that Americans don't maybe even ask enough questions, and, you know, there are all these reasons, busy and all this stuff, but these are fundamentally, significantly culture and nation and law system governance shifting events. And it's just being glossed over.
It's a coup.
It really is a coup. It's a coup against the individual, though. I mean, they're not even, it's against you as a person. It's a coup on you.
Generationally.
Right. But it's also a coup on all the systems that have been created to protect your individual sovereignty.
Yes.
So, you know, it's a war on the states. It's a war on the local entities, you know, or corrupting them and getting them to turn against you, you know, to help the war on you. But yes, they want to control 325 million Americans one at a time in a way that strips them of all their property rights. I was just reading two books on the Civil War and Reconstruction. Mm-hmm. And sort of how the money systems in the Confederacy and the Union worked, and sort of how the after the war they reconciled and how they used the different sort of organized the different financial systems. But one of the things that was absolutely an imperative for the people who were arguing for a much tougher treatment of the South, you know, one of the reasons Lincoln was killed was he didn't want a tough treatment. He wanted to reconcile and come back to being a whole country that was mm-hmm, productive. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of the reasons he was moved out. But one of the things they did was they engineered a divide and conquer of white against black, which was unbelievable how they did it. And it was clearly intentional. They had clearly, if they wanted to subjugate the South for a century, they needed, you know, huge divide and conquer. And if you look at what they're doing, and how they're using, and I would say this about the Uniparty and the central bankers, the cultural wars and the divide and conquer of the cultural wars are busy keeping everybody fighting with each other while both members of the Uniparty just keep implementing that control grid.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. So, you know, they're playing the same game. It's not white versus black this time, although there's some white versus black in there. you know, but it's men versus women, it's left versus right, it's all this divide and conquer that, you know, it's one of the reasons at Solari we have focused on issues like the missing money, because the missing money is, you know, between 98 and 2015 when they took the books Dark and Secret, and we don't know how much is missing after that, you know, that's $65,000 per person. Per person for everybody, black, white, male, female, north, south, east, west, Heartland, coastal, $65,000 for everybody, you know, and I find that to be a very unifying issue.
Yeah, it should be. It should.
Yeah, I
a unifying issue that's often not talked about.
You?
Yeah.
Oh, come to Solari. That's all we talk about.
I know it is, Catherine. That's
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
And I love how you put it out there and share it. And I think a lot of people don't know this story. If you don't mind, could you just expand on this 21 trillion? How you come up with that number?
Sure. So I'm gonna let's go to a mythical planet and talk about a mythical planet so that I can show you conceptually the key ideas, and then we'll come back to the real history. So imagine I'm on a mythical planet and I decide, you know, I just can't, we have this system called, you know, a republic, and I just can't get the population to vote for financial responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just given up on trying to run this thing. It's too hard. It's too complicated. I'm just going to take all the money and run. Now, here's how I'm going to do it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have the government issue lots of debt, and I'm going to put that debt in people's pension funds. So we're going to centralize the pension funds into institutional control, and then as people work hard and they save, there's going to be more money in the pension funds. I'm going to have them buy the government debt, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when the money comes in from the government debt, the Treasury, I just take it out the back door. So now I've got the asset and their pension funds have the debt, but they now owe themselves as taxpayers money to their own pension funds. They've taken an asset and converted it to a liability. And I control, because I've got the 21, they're in debt for 21 trillion, but I've got the 21 trillion of assets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got control and they're in a debt trap. I've got them in a debt trap and now I control them. So if you're the president of the United States, we could make Gary president tomorrow. He'd walk into the Oval Office and basically 40% of the checks he's got to send out every week, you know, are financed by the primary dealer network that is operating through the New York Fed, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if the central bankers turn off the tap, he's toast, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay. So who's running the country? Right?
It's a fair point. And if you watch the cash balances, E.J. Antoni reports on these cash balances in the federal government, mm-hmm. It gets a little tight sometimes.
It gets close.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So this is one of the reasons we need stablecoins. So imagine we're back to this mythical planet. And the way you've dealt with this, so you've been stealing the money and you've been taking the debt up. And now between the debt and the collateral markets, you've issued far more paper secured mm-hmm. by, you know, the land, the water, the people, the businesses. You know, you've grown the debt so high, and you've got every country in the debt trap, but there's more debt than there are real assets, right?
Yes.
So what do you do? Because you can't, the debt growth model can't grow anymore. It's over. So, the musical chairs is slowing and stopping. What's your next play?
Well, and you mean the debt trap is over because you don't have enough assets to back as collateral for more debt. You can't issue more debt because you have nothing behind it.
Well, you've had nothing behind it for a long time, but now that nothing is getting so big, you're talking about, you know,
lumpy
space
carpet.
Travel and getting asteroids to pump up your collateral. So anyway, the game is slowing, and your credibility is slowing. Moody's is, you know, S&P tried to drop your rating in 2012, and they went after, Department of Justice went after them and almost bankrupted them. And finally, Moody's dropped the rating, and Department of Justice didn't go after them. They were too busy explaining why they couldn't produce the Epstein files. So anyway, so now you have much more debt outstanding than you have real assets to back that debt. So what's your next play? Well, your next play is, first of all, to assert total control, because when you have to reconcile the debt to the assets, you want to be able to get everybody to do what you want. Mm-hmm. And part of what you want is you want them to learn to live at a much lower economic footprint, mm-hmm. right? You okay. want to control all the real assets, right? So you want to build a control grid, and then you want to take the real assets, which is why we are watching patterns of plunder happening all over the world, but it's happening in the United States too. And we're just about to produce a hard copy for our wrap-up, Plunder Capitalism, so, because we've seen more and more. We just saw in the Big Beautiful Bill, I think they've finally stripped it out, a proposal that you sell 250 million acres of federal lands in the 11 Western states.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Which has raised a lot of questions. Everybody's saying, well, wait a minute, that's not, they're not going to sell that to the people. It's going to go to a small handful of very, very well-capitalized firms. They're going to buy all that land, and we're just going to instead have the government own it, have them own it. How does that an advantage for us? Oh, they're going to build high-density housing.
So I think, once again, you're being an optimist.
Your optimism.
My suspicion of what they're up to was defined by some of the trial balloons that were floated at Bitcoin 2024, where they proposed that the U.S. government start a buying program of Bitcoin. Because in a Ponzi scheme, you need new money coming in all the time.
Yes.
And at this point, getting state and federal government to come in is your next big. The whales can't get out unless they have big new money coming in. Okay. So you do ETFs that brings in a lot of money that gives you the ability to pump the price, because this is a pump and dump tool. And, you know, so Larry Fink goes to Davos last year and says, okay, you know, Bitcoin could go as high as 700,000. You pump Bitcoin with government purchases, and they've been trying to get there's all sorts of lobbyists out trying to get the states to also buy Bitcoin. And what I keep telling everybody is, if you can afford to buy Bitcoin, you can afford to cut taxes.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And your taxpayers can figure out for themselves where they want to speculate. Anyway, the federal government, Trump has created a Bitcoin strategic reserve, crypto strategic reserve.
Yes.
And they've also created a sovereign wealth fund. Okay. So at Bitcoin 2024, the idea was floated that you could sell Bitcoin and avoid taxes if you bought real estate. You could do a 1031 swap.
A 1031 for Bitcoin to land? Oh.
Yes. Wow. Remember, the goal is to get the real assets, right?
Absolutely.
So if you can talk everybody into pumping Bitcoin to 700,000, and then you swap your Bitcoin to the last sucker in the Ponzi scheme,
right?
You can basically walk off with that land for free.
That is brilliant. Now, try to help put this in context for folks that are listening. So when Bitcoin was created, the selling point, one of the biggest selling points, was no government involvement. This is a completely independent market. Government free. It's freedom from the central banks. It's freedom from federal government watching what you're doing. There were a lot of stories about how criminals were using it. That was a bad thing and all this. And then suddenly in the 2024 event that you mentioned, suddenly the entire industry is saying the government has to start buying Bitcoin. And the Bitcoin advocates, the folks that are just out in the community, the people you know in your family who love Bitcoin, shifted their entire story in about a day from the government shouldn't be involved in Bitcoin. It's the ultimate vehicle for freedom, financial freedom, resistance of the very control grid we're talking about, to, oh, no, the government has to buy lots of Bitcoin.
And regulate it. Please step in.
And regulate it. And I've not heard yet anyone except you explain
why suddenly they shifted that story. Is the way I'm depicting this so, the way it is correct? Am I correct in this?
Yes, so I do a great interview on the Solar Report with Steve Patterson, who's the co-author of Hijacking Bitcoin. And so I've done a lot of serious due diligence on Bitcoin, and I know a lot about it. And unfortunately, you have many wonderful people who got into Bitcoin. They love it because they've made a lot of money. You always love what makes you money.
Yep.
But they don't understand control, and they don't understand how control works, and they don't see the game. And so we've written a piece. We wrote for the state legislators called Bitcoin Bailout, and you can get it. It's hilarious. It's short. It's pithy, and it really helps you see the game. And what you need to understand is, you know, Bitcoin was, could have been, it was a very clever design. It could have turned into a great payment system on a private basis. It was hijacked, and now it's a pump and dump tool. And of course, the, you know, the people who encourage these kinds of prototypes, you know, that's, if you're the central bankers and you want an all digital system with digital, you know, money, you know, you want lots of prototypes happening, and Bitcoin was clearly one. And the notion that this was a bottom up phenomena, you know, it's so sad. I'll never forget in 2017, I was headed, I just finished doing a huge due diligence on Bitcoin because I was an investment advisor. And the final moment was I went to see Bill Binney in Baltimore, and he explained to me how easy it was to hack and manipulate. And, you know, so here I have the top technical director from NSA, you know, basically punching a hole in the whole myth.
The myth of blockchain million, being impenetrable.
Right. And the myth of 21 million limit being firm. And you'll see that in Bitcoin Bailout. So then I flew to Zurich. I had business in Zurich. And I went back to Basel to see some friends. And I had to go back to Zurich. So my friend drops me off at the Basel train station. Remember, this is 2017. I go up to buy a ticket on Swiss Rail. And it offers me an opportunity not only to buy in Bitcoin, but to top it off. To top off my Bitcoin wallet. And I'm sitting there and I'm, you know, I just drove by the Bank of International Settlements and it's 2017 in Switzerland and I can use Bitcoin in Swiss Rail. Right. So then I leave, fly to the Aspen Institute for a crypto conference where everybody's telling me how this is the people's revolution.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm like, no, no. What you need to understand is the central bankers are trying to corner gold. Because when they roll out the new system, they want to own, you know, a significant percentage of the gold. So they want to corner gold. And they've just talked retail into playing pump and dump on the crypto they created out of thin air. And while you're playing crypto, they're buying up the land and the real assets. Between the financial crisis and the moment I went to Aspen, the land report said that the wealthiest 100 landowners had doubled their land holdings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bill Gates is buying farmland.
Oh, yeah.
Get the joke. So the central, they were saying the central bankers hate Bitcoin. I said, are you kidding? They love Bitcoin. They got you all busy and they're cornering gold.
It is a brilliant misdirection. And I've talked to some folks that were, and I'm not an expert in Bitcoin by any stretch because I've never been able to understand the value proposition. And I have people say, well,
right, exactly. There is no value proposition other than in a pump. You know, if you ride a pump, right, you can make a lot of money. Right?
That's right.
Yeah, correct.
And then they say, right. Well, you can't make any more Bitcoin. And I said, well, wait a minute. I know a firm that has a Bitcoin mining operation. They had excess supply of peakers. They had a peaker that had excess supply of electricity. Mm-hmm. They couldn't figure out how to monetize that. So they bought a bunch of servers and they sit in a room and every once in a while one goes ding. And a coin is, you know, a digit changes on a screen and we're told, oh, they've minted a coin. And I said, well, how? Blockchain. Okay. All right. So how many minutes does that computer have to run to create a coin? And what is the value of having the computer run other than it's sucking up a bunch of electricity? I mean, it's just,
In 2023, Bitcoin used 123% of the energy used by the entire Netherlands.
Wow.
I'm telling you, you got to go read Bitcoin Bailout, and I have it in a hard copy. I'm happy to send you copies. But, you know, once you see it, you can't unsee it. Now, if you go back to that video shorty group, Gary, there's one of the links we have is on plunder capitalism, land grab, and cybercrime. And one of the videos in that list is Howard Lutnick, who was a primary dealer, ran Cantor Fitzgerald, and now is Secretary of Commerce, explaining that we shouldn't worry about the federal debt because the federal government owns $500 trillion worth of land and mineral resources, and he and Elon Musk are going to monetize that.
I heard that, and I thought, hold on, wait a minute.
Back that up.
Don't need to monetize that. You know, this is troubling.
Well, but here's the question. Because you and I, we are sitting in the midst of the greatest misallocation of capital in the history of the Western world. And one of the reasons for that misallocation of capital is it's being run in a system where no one can say no. So if you look at why my old partners once upon a time said we're taking, you know, you heard the story of the pension fund leader who said they've given up on the country. They're moving all the money out.
Yes.
And that's when the $21 trillion started to disappear. And so the reason they decided to essentially engineer a coup by financial means, is this system is a runaway. And it's got a negative return on investment. If you're spending tons of money that have a negative return on investment, but give you control. And the problem is, you know, you get more and more billionaires and more unproductive behavior, whether it's the guys at the top using government money. You know, it's funny. Somebody complained about a socialist winning in New York. And I said, well, what do you expect? I mean, Wall Street doesn't believe in capitalism anymore. They're the biggest welfare recipients on the planet.
Right.
You know, they just believe in sucking up government money and you know, instituting central control. So, you know, an honest socialist, and I'm not saying the guy's honest, I don't know anything about him, you know, to many people looks better because, you know, we would all love to return to capitalism. We're just sick of crime.
Theft, plunder.
Well, that's right. I mean, and you know, this experiment we had with Doge where Congress sat around and pretended they had no idea what was going on into the federal government until Elon Musk showed up and told them that, you know, Stacey Abrams got $1.9 billion to buy appliances. First of all, it's preposterous that they didn't know. But when the American people started seeing some of these numbers, it rocked some people's view of what the government really is.
Well, it doesn't rock my view at all because $21 trillion is missing, which of course Elon didn't bring up. But I have a very dark view on Doge because if you want to end fraud, Gary, the first place you go is DOD and the second place you go is HUD and you say, and at the same time you go to the New York Fed bank account for DOD, HUD, and Treasury. That's where you go. And you say, okay, where's the $21 trillion and the money that went missing after 2015 that is secret, and let's get it back. And let's not let the people who have it, you know, politically put us in a debt trap. Let's reverse the debt trap and, you know, let's even the playing field politically. That's what you do. But Doge didn't go there. What Doge did was go exactly where you want to suck up and privatize all the data that you need to build a social credit system.
Yes.
They went to the IRS, they went to Social Security, they went to the Treasury payment data. And then when that was done, XAI made a deal with Planeteer AI, Planeteer's stock goes to the moon, and then suddenly Musk leaves.
Yes.
And so what it looks to me like, he knew exactly what he wanted. When he got there, he got it, he sucked it all up, and then he left.
Wow.
I mean, that looks to me like the building of a social credit system. And if you look at the big plant he built in Memphis, before then, you know, steamrolling and breaking a lot of laws to do it fast,
Catherine,
looked like they were just putting an
You're right. We're running up against the clock. I got so wrapped up in this, I missed the 2-minute warning for you. But we are running up against the clock. The website you can go to track what Catherine is talking about is called the Solari Report, S-O-L-A-R-I. Now, you were kind enough to sit down with us and do this podcast a little bit ago. We're going to have that pushed out onto our different platforms over the next day or so, and then we'll be putting shorts out for the next, for quite some time. But I just wanted to thank you for spending yet another hour with us. We appreciate you coming on the Conservative Voice again to go through some of this. And we will be posting these articles and things out there. And just thank you for joining us today.
And all your hard work.
Thank you. You guys have a wonderful evening.
Thanks. You too. And hopefully we'll speak again soon.